Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Starting off with our big Midwestern crops, corn and soybeans in drought. Pretty good news there. We see less than a quarter of the U.S. corn and soybean production areas currently in drought. 24% of the corn crop, 22% of the soybean crop that will be mostly planted in the next several weeks.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Now, both of those crops have been on a steady general downward trend since about early summer of 2023. Just to remind everybody, we actually saw corn in drought coverage as high as 70% in late June of 2023. And at the same time, June 27th of 23, 63% of the soybean production area was in drought. So we've basically taken off two-thirds of that over the last several months, and we're at our current favorable state.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Legislation that we are introducing today is called the Farmer Act.
North Dakota Senator John Hoeven, a member of the Senate Ag Committee, on the floor of the Senate Tuesday.
FARMER stands for Farmer Ag Risk Management, Enhancement, and Resilience. And that's just exactly what this farm bill does, what this legislation does. And really, we think this is an important step to getting to a farm bill, and hopefully this year.
And he breaks the legislation down.
This is all about what we've got right here, keeping the farm in the farm bill. Matter of fact, it's about putting more farm in the farm bill. And that's going to have to happen in order to get a farm bill accomplished this year. Well, how do we do that? What does that mean? That means strengthening crop insurance, our farmers' number one risk management tool, and also updating ARC and PLC, which is the countercyclical safety net, ARC ag risk coverage, and PLC price loss coverage. That is the countercyclical safety net that our farmers rely on. So crop insurance, the number one risk management tool for farmers nationwide, combined with the countercyclical safety net, updating ARC and PLC to make it relevant, given the incredible increase we have seen in input costs that our producers face. When you look at fertilizer and all the inputs, fuel, everything else, all the inputs that our farmers and our ranchers are required to purchase now to raise that crop, or for ranchers to raise those animals, those costs have gone up dramatically, and commodity prices for our food products have come down, which really puts pressure on our farmers and ranchers, and that's why it's so important that we update crop insurance and the countercyclical safety net to make it relevant in terms of risk management for our producers across this great nation. We have a huge ag industry, very diverse across all of our states, and so this really is fundamental to getting a farm bill done, and done right, and hopefully done this year. So what this bill, as I say, focuses on the crop insurance piece. And so what does it do? Well, it does two things. One, it strengthens crop insurance by increasing the premium support, making it more affordable to purchase crop insurance. And two, it enables our farmers to insure to a higher level. And there's two ways that they do that. One is at the enterprise level. So at the farm level, they buy crop insurance. This makes it more affordable to buy up to a higher level of coverage, say 80 or 85% coverage on a more affordable basis. And then they can get a second tier policy that helps them. It's called supplemental coverage option. And that's actually based on a countywide average. And so they can buy that supplemental coverage to insure up to a higher level, up to 90%, on a realistically affordable basis. Now, the other thing it does is it calls on the Secretary of USDA, the Secretary of Agriculture, to look at this supplemental coverage. And for states that have big counties, like my home state of North Dakota, or Senator Bozeman's state of Arkansas, Texas, and others, it requires that RMA, risk management agency that provides crop insurance, that they look at how these policies are done to make it work better for states that have large counties, which many of our states do. So those are the kind of enhancements to crop insurance that really serve our farmers. And it's not just our farmers. We're also doing more for our ranchers, our livestock producers. But really, it's much more than that. This legislation helps our farmers, it helps our taxpayers, and it helps all Americans.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We already see a softening, depending on the category, right? So, I mean, there is a softening. The problem is, you heard the price outlook I was mentioning earlier, just the 2 year from 22 to 20 to 24, we're talking anywhere from 20 to 30% drops. We're not seeing that on the cost side, right?
Former chief economist for the House Ag Committee, now co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center, Dr. Bart Fisher.
So, I mean, there's certainly a squeeze there, but there's absolutely a softening compared to where we were 2 years ago, but nothing on the order of the softening we've seen in the market on market prices. And so it's the cost price squeeze, I mean, that every farmer is familiar with, but it's the one that's, you know, that's hitting the hardest right now and certainly into the outlook.
And then there's conservation and climate smart commodities.
Certainly, you've got several. Let's just look in within the state of Texas. And I know everybody's feelings on climate smart. Sort of the way I look at it, you know, I went to Cambridge 20 years ago to study environmental policy. We've been no-till in our operation for 25 years. I mean, we've been climate smart a lot longer than people have been using that term in Washington, right? The rest, they're all catching up. So it could be a lot worse, right? I mean, we could be having a conversation about how we're going to cap your emissions and do all this stuff. So the fact that it's incentive-based, to me, is a good thing. You can make what you will of how the administration has approached it. To me, that's a good thing, that it's at least incentive-based. It could be a lot worse. In terms of the projects, there's several commodity group led projects. Cotton is one of them through the protocol. You've got sorghum that's running a project. You've got rice running a project. A&M is also running one. I'm the economics lead on the project for A&M. And so I would encourage you, you know, I get it. It's frustrating. It's more paperwork. You know, if you look at the project we're doing, our goal is to have 1 5-year contract. So you have paperwork one time and you're done. And so, and most of these are small enough that if you put a few hundred acres in sorghum, you can put a few hundred acres in the A&M contract as well. And so I would encourage you to look at it. Do I think long term, where is it going? I mean, I know all this. All the talk is about how they're going to establish new carbon markets and so on and so forth. I mean, we've been talking about this for 5 decades on the climate conversation. Maybe they're going to have some sort of breakthrough. My suspicion is, you know, if we see a shift in the White House in particular, we're not going to talk about climate smart very much going forward. But for the contracts that are in place, the grants that came through USDA, I think they'll see them through because a lot of that funding's already been obligated. So I think we'll see it through. But beyond that, question mark.
And unfortunately, politics trump policy.
The problem is all of this stuff has been wrapped up in politics, right? So if you look at the IRA funding, that $20 billion that was provided by the IRA for conservation, it is a flash in the pan. If you bring it into the Farm Bill, you can add it permanently to the Title II baseline. To me, sitting here today, it is an absolute no-brainer that if you're a supporter of conservation, you would do that. But it's been hijacked by the political process that, you know, we can't go down that road, and we drew these bright lines. Similar on all the climate smart stuff too, right? It's wrapped up in politics. We'll go back to the 18 bill. If you look at what was done in the 18 bill in Title II, we essentially reformed CSP. And some of you may have very strong feelings about CSP, but our goal is to take the best features of that and build it into EQIP, where the whole premise would be, hey, if there are high-impact things you're doing on your operation, let's use the EQIP model to cost share on it. So if you're doing no-till, we know how much it costs to keep it going, particularly with chemical prices and weed resistance. Let EQIP partner and help, you know, and help offset the cost of maintaining some of those. Sounds strangely like climate smart incentives, right? Well, that whole framework is already there. We just had to package it differently because of politics. And so the challenge is going to be, can they strip the politics out of it and just move forward? Because this is not that hard to do if they're able to sidestep the politics.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We all have fresh in our memory the cattle cycle of 2014 and 15. And I'll just start off by saying this is a completely different cycle, and we're going to get into more detail on that in just a couple of minutes.
Mike Murphy is with Cattle Facts.
Calves, though, for this year, we're going to average 290 on a U.S. annual average basis. We're going to get calves to about 325 this spring. You will pull back into the summer time frame. And then by fall, you can have some calves that could be as low as kind of 275 to 280 at those fall lows, which would be very similar to what we had this past year. Now, we are dealing with a smaller calf crop, as we got the information confirmed with that here on Wednesday with the inventory report. The key things on some of these are going to be the number of heifers are going to be offered up as we look into the influence that's going to have on the valuation of calves. And I would just say that's kind of the first thing that I would tell you that's a lot different about this cycle than the previous cycles. When we go back to that 2012 to 2014 time frame, we were already retaining heifers back at the ranch starting in 2012. And so by the time we got to 2014 and 2015, and we really started to suck those heifers back and keep them back at the ranch, you got that big upswing into the market. And that was what created that real impulsive market because we pulled them back. But it also created that bigger corrective move to the calf market as well as we got into more supply pretty quickly, compounded with the capacity challenge. That's not this cycle. With what we know today, we're going to be looking to add capacity at the slaughter level in the course of the next 2 to 3 years. We've got a plant at North Platte, Nebraska that will come on board here in about 12 to 15 months. There's another project that should be operational here in the next few years down there in the panhandle of Texas. So we're actually going to be adding more capacity. At the same time, we haven't even seen where we're pulling those heifers back at the ranching level. Now, we expect to find that over the course of the next few years, but right here in front of us, we're way different than the previous cycle. Again, as a reminder, 2012, we were already pulling those heifers back. We haven't even started that process. So when we start to think about that impact, the growth that you're seeing here, like on the calf crop into 2026, is very subtle. Most of that's going to be what we see in terms of mama cows being kind of captured back at the ranching level. So this is very positive. And why we're having this conversation is we're all trying to kind of sit there and we're balancing between what does the calf market look like, fresh in our memory from the cycle 10 years ago, and then with what Matt Macon shared with us a little bit earlier. We've got La Nina returning. And if you heard, the key term that Matt shared with you is that historically La Ninas are what? Multiple years. Now, multiple might mean two, might mean three, hopefully not four, but we have to have that kind of in perspective as we start to look at the valuation of, does it make sense to try to own a few bred cows or not? The profitability is there. The economics say yes to do that. And I think when you take the into consideration what should happen here over the next few years, calf values as a percent of fed cattle values are going to improve.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Under normal circumstances, we would have been celebrating the passage of a new farm bill by now. Unfortunately, we're not there yet, and our farmers continue to face far from normal circumstances.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas is Dr. John Bozeman.
But we are making progress, and I'm committed to meaningfully addressing the needs of farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. Alongside bolstering the Title I reference prices, maintaining and improving crop insurance is at the top of the list for my farm bill priorities. But more importantly, these are the top priorities of farmers across the country. The first of many farm bill listening sessions I've participated in started with a roundtable in Senator Holdren's home state of North Dakota. The takeaway from that event has been echoed across the countryside and in meetings throughout Washington. We need more farm in the farm bill. This next farm bill must update the risk management tools farmers and ranchers need to succeed in order to reflect the nature of the challenges under which they operate today. Because here's the reality. Producers are experiencing unprecedented challenges, regulatory uncertainty, and historic volatility in the farm economy, all of which are projected to even get worse. A producer from Minnesota told me recently that record high input costs, coupled with declining crop prices, would mean that she would have to harvest a record yield just to break even. That's not a scenario farm families want to pass on to the next generation. Historic inflation, rising interest rates, a record trade deficit, devastating natural disasters, and global disruptions will make it more difficult for our farmers to succeed in the years to come. And with an outdated farm safety net described by a Texas farmer as 2 inches above the concrete, agriculture is left wondering, what level of crisis is necessary to compel Washington to act? I commend Senator Hovind's leadership in introducing the Farmers Act and proactively addressing the needs of farmers and ranchers who have asked for improvements to the federal crop insurance program. The Farmer Act includes critical components to modernizing the farm safety net for producers across all regions and all commodities. From wheat in North Dakota to cotton in Georgia, peaches in New Jersey, corn in Illinois and Colorado, to apples in Vermont and soybeans in Ohio, producers in every state could reap the benefits of more affordable crop insurance options. The strength of this approach is underscored by the endorsement of over 20 grassroots organizations representing the voices of farm families from across the country. We can pass a farm bill that strengthens Title I and Title XI while also making improvements across every other title to meet our shared goals. This isn't an either-or decision. Next Farm Bill provides an incredible opportunity to make things right for farmers, ranchers, rural communities, and those in need. Working together, we can protect and enhance voluntary conservation programs, provide investments needed to open new export markets, and expand existing markets, build on research that allows our farmers to do more with less while reducing environmental impacts, protect the health of our nation's herds and flocks, and help rural communities flourish and prosper. Passing such a bill is never an easy task, but it's one this body has come together to accomplish time and time again. I look forward to continue to work with Chairwoman Stabenow and my Senate colleagues to pass a farm bill that achieves these goals, and I very much appreciate the work of Senator Hovind and his contribution to that process.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Our farmers, obviously, they face tremendous challenges due to weather. They have no control over the weather and prices.
North Dakota Senator John Hovind on the floor of the Senate Tuesday on his Farmer Act.
You know, we have this network of family farms and ranches across this country. They are price takers. They don't get a chance to set any prices. Okay, so crop insurance, that's why it's their number one risk management tool, because when they don't have a crop or they have a very substandard crop, this crop insurance enables them to stay in the game. So that family farm can continue to be around for the next year, so that rancher can continue to be around for the next year. And it's vitally important, when they have no control over, like I say, weather or prices, is to keep them in the game for the long term. And that benefits our taxpayer because we have the highest quality, lowest cost food supply in the world. And this is the most effective way to keep that network of family farms and ranches out there on the land. And that really benefits every single American every single day. Because what do our farmers do? They produce food, fuel, and fiber for this nation. Well, that's national security for sure. Food security is national security. But think about this for a minute. We have the highest quality, lowest cost food supply in the world. Every American benefits from that every day. Every time, you have something to eat in this country that you buy in our great grocery stores brought to them from the farm and from the ranch, we have the highest quality and the lowest cost. Americans spend less of their budget on food, and they have better food than anyone else, more choices, more options, higher quality. But Americans spend less of their budget on food than any other developed country, brought to them by our farmers and ranchers. That's a remarkable benefit. That's a benefit that every American receives every single day. And that's why it's so important that we get farm policy right. That's why we've got to get it right, okay? And here's the final point I want to make. We can't take this network of farmers and ranchers that we have in this country for granted. We have about 16 million people involved in agriculture, directly or indirectly. But our food is brought to us by farms and ranches, a diverse set of family farms and ranches across this country. Okay? And we can't take that for granted. And if we don't have this safety net, if we don't have crop insurance that they can afford to buy, which they buy, and if they can't access this countercyclical safety net, right? We don't have that network of farms and ranches. And like a lot of other industries in this country, we can end up with just a few big companies. And I wonder how that's going to work out. Because all that competition you see from these millions of farmers and ranchers providing that highest quality, lowest cost food supply, that could change, right? So we can't take this for granted. So when it comes to getting the farm bill done, we've got to get it right. We've got to get it right, and that's what this is all about, getting crop insurance right and making sure that our farmers can both access crop insurance and the countercyclical safety net, ARC and PLC, at the same time. They need both. Look, this is about getting a farm bill done. This legislation needs to be included in the farm bill and will go a long ways towards making sure that we get a farm bill done and hopefully done this year.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
All of us in this room, we all have a different sort of outlook, if you will, on the value of fed cattle.
Mike Murphy is with Cattle Facts.
But let's just say, for an example, we're going to trade fed cattle in the mid-180s on average in the next few years. We're going to sustain and improve the values of calves during that exact time frame. And that's what this data shares with you. Now, the best of it might be here in 2024, 2025. You start to get a few more calves offered up in 26, and that spread starts to narrow a little bit. But we should feel very confident about having a calf market that's going to be sustainable near $3 over the next few years. And so as that relates back to what can I afford to pay for a bred female, a bred heifer, and this is just a perspective for you all to look at. This may not fit anybody in the room today. It may fit all of you. But what we're trying to kind of illustrate here is, number one, as you look at that bottom part of that slide, that text, it says, historically, the way that we look at the math, it takes about 4.6 calves to pay for a bred heifer. Again, not perfect. There's a lot of moving parts with that when we go back and measure this and analyze this data over time. The thing about like a $3 calf market over the course of the next 3 to 4 years on average, it would imply that you could be buying bred females for about $2,400, and they're going to make you some money. So we're still right today, based on what our outlook is over the next few years, from an economic standpoint, to say, you know what, it is okay. We can step out there and buy more females, expand our operations. Now, is it going to be slow across the industry? Yes. Do we have some concerns relative to La Nina and its impact? For certain. We can't ignore those. But overall, from an economic standpoint and the valuation of where calves are going to be, there's still opportunity to go ahead and expand your operations today. And we know, and Randy's going to talk more about this here in a couple minutes, you know, we need to have more expansion to continue to kind of build our industry back up, if you will.
And there are questions. When will we start rebuilding the herd? But Murphy says, now is the time.
We've got data going all the way back to 1980 when we look at this. But for those, as we start to think about where we're going to be over the next, you know, 3, 5, 8, 10 years, and you start to look at those here in the financing sector and the valuation of what these females are going to be and how that influences your balance sheet and all these types of things, there's a high correlation to fed cattle value and bred cows. And you can see that pattern that we had in 2014 when we had that big sharp rally and then the real steep correction. Again, we don't believe that to be the case in this current cattle cycle. We're going to be able to sustain these values for a longer term in here over the course of the next few years. But it is important to kind of understand that if fed cattle can move towards $2 on an annual average or even like $2.05, you're going to continue to see where bred females are going to get higher. And so if you're in a situation that you're saying and you're asking yourself, do I wait or do I do something today? I think that you have to say the answer is do something today. Because if all the things that Kevin alluded to and we get that demand that stabilized retail prices moving higher, that'll all funnel through the system and we will have higher values on the fed cow side, which will ultimately lead to higher values on the bred female side as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
When it comes to areas of agricultural commodities covered by drought, per the April 2nd U.S. Drought Monitor,
if you look at all major crops and commodities, we see pretty much across the board decreases from this time a year ago.
With USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey noting few exceptions, such as soybeans, barley, and sugar beets, seeing year-over-year increases in drought coverage.
Looking at winter wheat, our one very active crop at this time of year, just 18% of the U.S. winter wheat production area currently experiencing drought. That's actually up a little bit from a few weeks ago. We dropped off to 12% during the month of March. But regardless of how you look at it, that is down significantly from 49% of the winter wheat area in drought during the planting season last October.
Reflected in improved winter wheat crop condition ratings over the past 5 weeks. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.